Hello, it's Wednesday, 27th of October. I'm Andrew Pearce, and this is the Andrew Pearce Show coming from the Daily Mail newsroom with a budget special. So, coming up, the Chancellor. He spoke well. He's a consummate performer. But what does it mean? There's a reform, temporary, to business rates. There is now an increased minimum wage. Also, there's been changes to universal credit to help families who are working, who are in receipt of benefit. But the debt level, astonishingly high, no change there. Inflation expected to be around 4%, but some eye-catching changes, a freeze in fuel duty, a freeze in beer and cider duty. And guess what? If you like sparkling wine and fruit ciders, the duty's going to be cut. Cheers, Mr. Sunak. So the Chancellor Rishi Sunak, in his budget speech, pledged to create a new post-COVID economy. Headline announcements include changes to universal credit, fuel duty rises being cancelled yet again, cheaper pints, but duties decreased on beer and cider. Huge spending increases on the NHS, as we know. How's it all going to be paid for? Anthony Brown is the Conservative MP for South Cambridgeshire, and he's a member of the House of Commons Treasury Select Committee, and he joins me now. Anthony Brown, there was a time when we thought the Tory party was the party of fiscal responsibility, a party of low tax and spend. Not anymore after today's budget.
Well, indeed, and some people are calling it brownite. I think one of your rival papers called it brownite. Rishi Sunak is very much a fiscal conservative. He's from before the time as Chancellor, he's stressed it now. And one of the things that he emphasised right at the beginning of his budget speech is the importance of balancing the books and living within our means. And he set out his fiscal rules. He's got set out a new set of fiscal rules, basically the same that we've had as a country for the last 25 years, that you should only borrow to do long-term investment, and that actually day-to-day spending should be within your revenues, your tax revenues. Setting out in this budget that actually national debts would be coming down by the end of Parliament, we'll have a budget surplus, a current budget surplus, by 2023-24 of about 0.5% of GDP. So actually, he's put a lot of emphasis on balancing the budget here, balancing the books here. It's certainly, for me, that's a great reassurance. But the reason he can do it isn't because of tax rises or public spending cuts, but actually because the economy is growing a lot stronger than everyone else thought it would be a year ago or 2 years ago. And certainly on the Treasury Select Committee, we've been doing a lot of work on the impact of the pandemic, and we thought it would be absolutely catastrophic in terms of economic growth and unemployment. But as he set out today, the economy is bouncing back very strongly. We've got the strongest growth in the G7. Unemployment is the peak of unemployment is now predicted to be 2 million lower than we thought it was going to be. And that's a lot of extra people working, less benefits having to be paid to the unemployed. And that's what gives him the breathing space here to have a sort of generous budget.
Some of the elephants in the room, of course, Anthony, he said rising inflation, predicted it will be an average of 4%, but some people think it could go higher than that. Inflation of 4% is going to put huge pressure on interest rates, and that will put huge pressure on debt repayment. And as the country owes over £2 trillion, that could add billions of pounds to our debt levels.
Absolutely. And that's certainly a big concern of mine, a big concern of Chancellor, a big concern for economists. The Chancellor set out at the beginning of this speech that a 1% interest rate rise would lead to increased interest payments by the government of £23 billion a year, which is an absolutely huge amount of money. And, 1% interest rate rise, I think that's highly likely. It could rise by 2%. And then you're talking about an extra £40 billion or so pounds a year, which is by comparison, the national insurance contribution rise that has caused a bit of controversy, that will raise just £16 billion a year. So you're talking about many multiples of that. So that's the importance of bringing down the national debt. I know a lot of people say, it doesn't matter, interest rates are low, but they won't stay low forever. They're absolutely certain to rise. And that's why I really welcome the fact that he did put quite a lot of emphasis on this on balancing the budget and bringing back the national debt under control. It will only get down very slowly because it's so high, it's the size of the whole economy at the moment, but at least there's a course here for it to start coming down. And by the way, you said it earlier in your earlier question, you said it used to be the Conservatives believe in tax cuts. He did actually at the end of his speech, and the bit that he finished on was that he believes in tax cutting, and he would set out an agenda for tax cuts in future. But there are actually many measures in here on tax measures that are actually classified as cuts. So things like the fuel duty freeze, which you mentioned. So they've set in law before that it should rise every year. So freezing it accounts under Treasury rules as a tax cut. That's one $1.6 billion. Alcohol duty freeze is $600 million cut. There's also a business rate multiplier freeze, a bit of a technical thing, but it's, it reduces the business rates that companies have to pay by about £1 billion a year by the end of Parliament. So there are quite a few measures in here that are tax cuts. And actually, if you take out the national insurance increase, which was announced before the budget, I mean, it is in this budget legally, and it'll be part of the finance bill which puts the budget into law, but it was obviously announced publicly beforehand. If you take that out, then actually overall it's a tax-cutting budget.
But you can't take it out, Anthony, that's the problem.
You can't, no, absolutely not. I know, absolutely not. But I'm just saying the other measures that are new today, the new things that I've been reading about today, in aggregate, they actually cut tax rather than increase tax.
And on that national insurance rise, we know it's going to fund largely money to try to beat down the huge rise in NHS waiting lists. But what about poor old social care, Anthony? We've seen with great clarity the problems with social care during the pandemic. There's very little extra money for social care, and the country knows social care is in complete crisis.
Well, absolutely. I mean, that was made crystal clear to the entire country, for those who doubted it to start with, as a result of the pandemic, as you say, the inability of social care to really cope with what was happening. The money from the national insurance increase, as you say, initially, the majority of it is going towards the catch-up on the NHS, reducing the waiting list. There's over 5 million people waiting for treatment at the moment. But as that waiting list comes down, it will be refocused on social care and funding social care. And it's £16 billion a year. It's a lot of money for social care, and obviously the government now needs to set out exactly how it will spend that money and how it will be used in social care, because also there's many different ways that could be done.
Is he still dishy rishy to the Tory backbenchers, or is some of his lustre worn off?
No, absolutely, he's a very capable, very popular Chancellor, and one of the things that we're all really impressed by, actually, is, and various of my colleagues have mentioned it in their speeches so far, I've got to go back in the chamber and make my speech, is that actually he was brand new to the job just as the pandemic hit, and took really huge measures, sort of unprecedented, things like the furlough scheme, the bounce back loan scheme, all the different government support measures, and clearly they've worked extraordinarily well. No one, I challenge you to find any economist who thought our economy would be so untouched by the lockdown as it had been, or anyone who thought that unemployment would remain as low, you know, as thankfully low as it is now compared to what everyone thought it was going to be. And that is, you know, largely down to the fact that he had the courage and the insight to take those really big measures. And it's now paying off, and it means, because growth is higher than was being forecast, dramatically higher than was being forecast, it means that he can have this more generous, expansive budget. And again, with something for everyone in it, increase in spending on public services, and that is very high, but people want it. He mentioned that the public spending on for every government department would increase in real terms. Again, that's at this time, that's quite a surprise. But also, as I said, there's quite a few tax-cutting measures in there, even though they're outweighed by the national insurance increase.
Well, that's really interesting. That's Anthony Brown. He's the Conservative MP for South Cambridgeshire, and he is a member of the House of Commons Treasury Select Committee. Visit mailplus.co.uk to listen to The Andrew Pearce Show for free and in full, along with all our other podcasts and video series. Remember to tell your Alexa speaker to play Daily Mail News. It's been one of the worst-kept secrets in politics, because there's been a succession of leaks about today's budget. But one thing that's been kept under wraps is how Chancellor Rishi Sunak plans to pay for his largesse. Today, he announced the economy is growing faster than expected, but also pledged that total departmental spending will increase by over £150 billion this Parliament. So how's he going to balance the books? Ben Zaranko is a research economist at the Institute for Fiscal Studies and joins me now. Ben, the debt levels are eye-watering. Nobody really knows what £2.2 trillion means in real terms, but that's the amount of debt we're in.
That is the level of the UK national debt, but crucially, at the moment, the cost of actually servicing that debt, so the interest which we pay on that debt, is at historically low levels, because interest rates are at a very low level and have been for quite some time. So the actual cost of rolling over that debt isn't proving too troubling. What the Treasury is worried about is if that ceases to be the case. And as the Chancellor mentioned in his speech today, we are now increasingly exposed to the risk of higher interest rates and higher inflation feeding through into higher borrowing costs. So while he'll be pleased that in the meantime he's able to splash the cash, he will have one eye on those medium-term risks to the public finances.
Now, and according to his speech, borrowing as a percentage of gross domestic product will fall from nearly 8% this year to just over 3% next year and then continue to fall. Are you confident that actually he can get the debt levels down and the deficit, which is the difference between what we bring in each month and what we spend, can actually get into negative territory again?
Well, the first thing to say is at the moment, clearly all of these sorts of forecasts are subject to huge uncertainty and can be revised substantially. The world is clearly changing very fast at this moment in time. But based on the OBR's latest forecast published today, the Chancellor is on track to have debt falling as a share of national income and to be borrowing only to pay for investment within 3 years. So his fiscal rules, which he's confirmed today, allow him to borrow to pay for that investment, but he said he wants to pay for all everyday spending, so things like staff costs, delivering public services, all that should be covered out of tax revenues. And what we'd say is he's on track to do that just about based on our central estimates, but clearly things could turn out worse than expected, and if that were the case, he might have to rethink slightly.
Well, yeah, and the Institute for Fiscal Studies, we look to you to punch a holes in Chancellor's assessments and go through the Red Book the next day and see where they've exaggerated, where they've dissembled, as Chancellors are often wont to do. But this is a Chancellor who has subjected this country now to, is it the highest taxation rate? Probably, we're more taxed now than any other time since the Second World War.
That's right. This year has seen some very big tax rises, and combined with sort of pre-pandemic trends, that is going to mean the UK tax burden rises to the highest sustained level we have seen since records began, which basically means in history. And in a lot of ways, these are unusual things for a Conservative Chancellor to do. You know, he's announcing big increases in corporation tax. He's announcing an increase in the generosity of the benefit system today. He's announcing big increases in public service spending on sort of a similar scale to what was announced by Labour in 2000. These are not, you know, traditional Conservative policy approaches. So this is an unusual time, and I think that's partly why you know, the opposition perhaps aren't landing a glove in the same way they might have usually expected to. But there are a few things to bear in mind. The Chancellor today in his speech kept referring back to, you know, getting spending back to where it was in 2010. The biggest increase since 2010, school per pupil funding back to 2010 levels. I mean, he is a member of the party which has presided over those cuts over the past decade. He now might be getting around to reversing some of them, but for lots of public services, they will still feel like they're behind where they were, and they will still feel like it's a tight settlement, and things won't be easy for the next few years.
The Chancellor's had an incredible run. He's incredibly popular with the Conservative Party, backbenchers with Conservative Party members. It's very easy for a Chancellor to be popular when you're giving money away, but he is now taking money back, isn't he?
Absolutely. The Chancellor's announced more than £40 billion of tax rises this year alone. So there's a big increase in corporation tax. He's freezing income tax allowances, and there was the big manifesto-breaking increase in national insurance announced in early September, the new health and social care levy. So he has been certainly, you know, not been afraid to raise taxes. He's used the pandemic as cover for that, but a lot of that is actually just to pay for pressures that pre-existed even before COVID-19. And, you know, he's taken decisions like cutting the overseas aid budget. He's removed the £1,000 a year, £20 a week uplift to universal credit. So he has been taking decisions that squeeze households. And I guess the concern for him, and perhaps for his Treasury officials, is that as inflation rises, as household incomes are squeezed by things like tax rises next April, will some of that goodwill and that good feeling perhaps start to wear off?
Yeah, interesting. And I was going to ask you just finally, Ben, inflation is the big problem. He talks about it being an average of 4%. It could go higher. Fuel prices are scaling heights we've never known before. And if fuel prices continue to rise, don't all these calculations then look very flimsy and fragile?
Well, what happens to inflation is clearly one of the great unknowns. And the OBR have said they expect inflation to, you know, increase because of these well-publicised supply disruptions and things like gas prices, but they should then start to come back down. That may not turn out to be the case in practice. We'll have to wait and see. And, of course, that does mean that these forecasts are subject to uncertainty and risk. But it's also not just about inflation. I mean, for someone might be receiving a pay award this Christmas, perhaps, let's say 4%. Now, normally you might think a 4% pay rise sounds pretty good, but once you take into account increases in taxes you might have to pay, the fact that prices are rising at 4%, perhaps more, suddenly it doesn't start to look so great. And so it's we have to keep all these things in mind over the next year or two, because it's not quite as simple as it might appear on the outset.
Yeah, and he did say, didn't he expects by the end of the year or even the new year that the economy would be back to where it was pre the pandemic. Is that a little too optimistic?
Well, I think that just reflects that a lot of the economic news since the start of this year has actually been pretty good news. We had a very successful vaccine rollout. The economy's bounced back a bit quicker than expected. And in particular, I think the key thing is that the labour market seems to have performed much better than expected. The furlough scheme has been a tremendous success, and unemployment is expected to peak at just over 5% rather than the 12% or so people were predicting last year. So that's a big difference, right? And that's sort of perhaps why the forecasts now look more optimistic. And so, yeah, if we get back to where we were pre-pandemic by the start of next year, that's great. But we still will have missed out on about 2 years of economic growth. So we're still going to be well below, you know, the pre-pandemic trajectory or trend. So there is some ground still to catch up on. And the concern is, will the recovery now start to falter? Will things like trade disruptions, perhaps some Brexit-related disruptions, ongoing lingering concern about the virus, if these things start to bear down on, you know, growth momentum, if this improvement doesn't persist, the Chancellor might find himself wishing he'd kept more in reserve when it comes to next year's budget.
Fascinating. That's Ben Zaranka, research economist at the Institute for Fiscal Studies. Thanks for joining us. Why don't you visit mailplus.co.uk/subscribe to get access to all our podcasts, videos, opinion pieces and much more. If you want to get in touch, tweet us at mailplus or me at Toryboypierce. Well, it was confirmed in the budget statement that more than 7 million workers are to receive a pay rise after all. 5.6 million public sector staff, that's nurses, teachers, members of the armed forces, will get the pay increase from April. And at the same time, the minimum wage will rise by 59p to £9.50, boosting the incomes of 2 million of the lowest paid. But with cuts to universal credit already in place and a rising cost of living, how far will this all really go? I'm joined now by Katie Schumacher, Deputy Director of Policy and Partnerships at the Joseph Rowntree Foundation. Katie, so the Chancellor says that the public sector pay freeze is over. We will find out at some point next year how much the increase will be, which will come into force in April. We have seen that the minimum wage is rising to £9.50, but how much of that is really going to trickle into people's pockets when you consider the temporary £20 a week increase in universal credit has been removed?
Well, I think what we've seen with the budget is really a tale of two budgets for low-income households. So there was actually a lot in there to welcome for people who are in work. So yes, if you are on the minimum wage, you're going to see a big increase to your pay. Some public sector workers, the details, as you say, are still to come through, but some public sector workers are going to see their pay starting to rise after a long period of it not going up. But perhaps most significantly, we saw some big changes to universal credit for families who are in work. So what we saw was a change to what's known as the taper rate,
yes,
and so the work allowance. So this means that people will be keeping more of their earnings when they are on universal credit. And that's a really welcome thing that will improve the social security system for working families and actually begins to take some steps to turn the tide of in-work poverty that was going up before the pandemic. So there's a lot to welcome there. What we don't know yet, however, is quite how much better off those families are going to be and how far that is going to counterbalance that cut to universal credit that you mentioned. We're currently crunching the numbers on that. Unfortunately, we don't quite have them yet, but we will have very soon.
Can you explain what it means, the 8% cut to the universal credit taper rate, which means recipients get to keep more benefits money? What does it mean? How does it operate?
Because universal credit is a benefit for people who are in work as well as people who are out of work, when you're working, as your earnings rise, for each extra pound that you earn, a little bit of your universal credit is taken away. So eventually, when you earn enough, you no longer claim universal credit at all. Previously, that was set at, well, currently that is set at 63%. So for every extra pound that you earn, 63 pence of your universal credit entitlement is removed. That is dropping to 55%.
Right.
So for every extra pound that you earn, you'll be keeping 45 pence of that pound. And that, you know, that is a significant increase and a significant improvement to our social security system. But I think the really important thing to note here is that all of this will benefit working families. But of course, there are many families who can't work or who are currently looking for work, and they really were ignored in today's budget.
And that taper won't help them in any shape or form because they've got no income coming in from the workplace.
Exactly. So if you lost your job in the pandemic and you're currently looking for work, if you're unable to work, perhaps because you're terminally ill, perhaps because you're disabled, perhaps because you have caring responsibilities for a very young child or for an elderly parent, you know, there are lots of people who cannot work for various reasons. And there was nothing in the budget that will support and protect those families when we are on the face of a cost of living crisis. You know, we know that prices are going to be going up. The projection for inflation today was 4% next year. And, you know, we're already feeling it. We're seeing prices going up in the shops. Energy bills have gone through the roof. And, you know, people are on the lowest incomes have already seen £20 per week removed as universal credit has been cut. And those families are really going to face a winter of hunger and hardship and debt.
And for those families, just finally, Katie, is there any help they can seek if they are unemployed? They've had the universal credit. It was a temporary rise, of course, we know that. But nevertheless, you get used to the £20 a week. That's now gone. Is there any way they can get any more money out of the system if they struggle to pay their fuel bills and rising food bills?
Well, we know from work that the Joseph Rowntree Foundation published last week that 3.8 million low-income households are already in arrears with their bills. Most of them are in arrears with more than one bill. And actually, most of them were able to pay their bills in full and on time prior to the pandemic. So we have this huge overhang of debt that is dragging people down at the moment. The government has announced a £500 million household support fund that's going to be delivered through local authorities. We've argued that that is not really up to the scale of the challenge at hand, and we argued that it should be at least doubled. Unfortunately, that did not happen today. But certainly that will be being delivered by local authorities, so that's one potential pathway for people to get some help. And of course, if people are in debt, then there are a lot of excellent debt advice charities like Step Change and the Money Advice Service that can give people advice as well. But you know, that this really is the group that the Chancellor did not address today, that he really ignored today. He had an opportunity to put in place measures to help people weather the sort of living cost storm that is brewing, but he did not take that opportunity today.
Interesting. That's Katie Schumacher, Deputy Director of Policy and Partnerships at the Joseph Rowntree Foundation. Thanks for joining us. Well, now let's see what the reaction to the budget is in the Square Mile. Ruth Sunderland, of course, is business editor at the Daily Mail. Ruth, does the stock market like the budget? What do the currency exchanges make of the budget?
Well, certain parts of the stock market are pretty ecstatic. I mean, the pub sector, the shares have soared. I mean, it is a bit of a budget for boozers. You know, we've had tax breaks on things like sparkling wine, and there's also been a business rates cut, a temporary business rates concession, helping retailers and the hospitality industry to come out of COVID, a year's extension on that. So, I mean, they've absolutely been flying. So, and I think also the markets are quite encouraged by the fact that, you know, that there's been a big standing behind British science. When he's talking about turning Britain into a science superpower, and looking at research and development, and you sort of really rebuilding a new style of UK economy post-COVID. So I think all of that has gone down quite well. I think where it has to be sits with a slight kind of Jekyll and Hyde budget, and there's still, on the one hand, there's been pretty high public spending. On the other, Rishi's made a big commitment to a return to fiscal rectitude. He's put in place a couple of new fiscal rules that he's going to stick by. So I think the markets will be a bit concerned about the wider picture on the economy. So you are looking at inflation's going to be heading up. They predict close to 5%. That would be kind of 30-year highs. The tax burden is still very high. It's at its highest since the mid-50s and the times of Clement Attlee. And spending is at its highest share of GDP since the late 70s. So all of those are kind of big picture concerns that will obviously be weighing on people's minds in the city and of course beyond in the country.
We often discover the next day, Ruth, or even the day after, when people go through the Red Book, which has all the detailed calculations, that perhaps it's not quite as rosy as the Chancellor portrayed it in his budget speech, which was, as ever, a consummate, I thought, performance by the Chancellor, who is a very good performer at the dispatch box. Are we expecting any surprises when people crunch the detail?
Well, I mean, there usually are. I mean, one I've spotted already is actually on business rates. So this has been presented as a huge package and very generous. And, you know, to be fair, there are some generous points in there. So he's this year's relief that I was talking about for retail, hospitality and leisure, that's worth about £1.7 billion. So, you know, that's quite a lot. On the other hand, the Chancellor's fallen very short of what businesses really wanted, which was a complete root and branch overhaul of the business rate system. And I'm afraid when that year is up, the underlying problems of the high street are still going to be there. So this has been very disappointing. And I think some businesses, when it has time to settle in, will feel pretty disappointed with that. So, you know, that's one that I've spotted so far. I haven't spotted any others yet, but no doubt there will be. There are usually plenty of them lurking there.
Yeah, always is.
I mean, they're also, you know, you have some big omissions, don't you? So there's nothing been said, to my knowledge, about social care and the costs of the ageing population, which clearly, you know, is an issue that's overshadowing the economy, and that's a very long-term problem. Haven't really heard or seen anything particularly brilliant for savers. Now, you know, my sympathies go out to savers because I think the majority of our readers are savers rather than borrowers, and really there's been very little in terms of goodies for them for years. You know, low interest rates are great if you're a borrower, but if you're a saver, they're absolutely useless.
Absolutely. And of course, mind you, of course, that's one thing that might change, Ruth, because if inflation continues to rise, interest rates may yet go up.
They might go up, and the key point there is, what are real interest rates doing? Because if interest rates go up but inflation is higher, you're still in effect losing. So, you know, savers really are still in the, you know, they're just having a difficult time and have done for decades. It's not a good time to be a saver. The only way people have made returns is by taking on risk, either by going into the stock market or by looking at other assets like property, which have done fantastically well, obviously. But if you just want to look at a safe as houses bank or building society account, it's not been good, and the Chancellor's not really doing anything for the thrifty.
Absolutely. That's Ruth Sunderland. She's business editor at the Daily Mail. Read her tomorrow. She'll be all over the budget and we'll have all the detail too. So thanks for joining us. That's all we've got time for today. For the latest from the Daily Mail, download the Mail Plus app. Every weekday at 5 p.m. you can listen to me all over again. I'm Andrew Pearce. This is The Andrew Pearce Show. I'll be back tomorrow. Have yourselves a great evening and good night.